Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Stanmore Resources Limited fourth quarter activities report, hosted by Director and Chief Executive Officer Marcelo Matos and Chief Financial Officer Shane Young. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Matos. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you again for joining us on the call today to discuss this time that the fourth quarter activities report for 23 that we just released this morning. As usual, I will start with a summation of the release before inviting everyone for the opportunity for Q&A. Starting with safety, as usual, we maintain a good record compared to industry averages. However, we are disappointed to report four recordable injuries and a serious accident during the fourth quarter. This accident was related to a totally avoidable leg fracture whilst one of our contractors was disembarking from a dozer. This obviously led to a thorough investigation and audit of all our equipment compliance to try to avoid such incidents in the future. We remain focused on maintaining our good safety record, and we are now focusing our safety program on leading initiatives and also pivoting our reporting focus from the TRIFR, which is the total recordable injury frequency rates, to the serious accident frequency rates, in line also with the Queensland government regulators, to ensure that we do whatever it takes to prevent those serious accidents from reoccurring. Moving to overall highlights for the quarter, very pleased to report strong operating results, full year saleable production finishing above our guidance at 13.2 million tons, flowing also onto strong sales performance of 3.8 million tons in the quarter and 13.1 million tons in the full year, which was helped by the strategic purchase of surplus logistics capacity to offset the constrained logistics systems that this was discussed in previous occasions as well. And, of course, generally improved availability in the system despite congestions leading just to the end of the year, especially with wet weather the last days of the year. This demonstrates the resilience of our operations in a year that started with a headwind back in January 23, with a lot of wet weather. And if some of you may recall, the force majeure and the amount of rain that was experienced in DBCT back in early 23. So we always had our sales profile back-ended and in recovery mode, but very pleased to see that we finished up with a strong performance and above our guidance range. During the quarter, we also announced various transactions that included the agreement to sell the southern area of Wards Well to Peabody, a transaction that we believe is truly value accretive to Stanmore, providing also a competitive alternative to optimize the development of Lancewood in the future. We also closed out a busy December with the purchase of the remaining 50% interest in the Millennium and Mavis assets, as we just announced just before the new year. Overall, the quarter translated into closing cash and net cash positions of $446 million and $126 million U.S. respectively, leaving us in a strong financial position heading into 2024. In relation to operations, South Walker Creek had another solid quarter, despite the plant shutdowns for both the dragline 28 and our wash plant, as well as some impacts from wet weather, especially towards the end of December. Run-of-mine production was lower quarter on quarter, in line with mine sequence, which was planned, was not surprising. But with strong inventory levels supporting stable saleable production and sales. Overall, South Walker achieved above guidance saleable production and has set some fantastic records, including run of mine tons of 7.97 million tons and an all-time record of annual saleable production of 6.26 million tons, as well as total waste, blasted BCMs, and averaging yield. It's a pretty strong year for South Walker, and we look forward to seeing new benchmarks that the operation will be able to set, especially following the completion of the MRHOC and the expansion projects, which are now in a full steam. Poitrel closed out the year with an exceptional quarter as well. Run of mine increased by 37.5% on the third quarter, in line with a back-ended production profile for the year, which has always expected, as indicated in all our previous interactions and releases. Strip ratios also continue to improve, noting that these excluded the capitalized volumes from Ramp 10 North box cut, which in fact progressed well during the quarter, concluding the year in line with our original plans, despite the wet weather impacts earlier in 23. Various production records, including total material moved, ultimately result in the site achieving above guidance for 2023. This is notwithstanding finishing the year with very strong ROM inventories of 925,000 tons to underpin also a strong start for 2024. Isaac Plains managed consistent performance on the December quarter, with strong opening inventories mostly offsetting impacts from wet weather and some CHPP outages. Overall, the complex closed out the year with saleable production of 2.9 million tons, just below the upper end of our guidance. And we are pleased to report that another 113 hectares of rehabilitation was completed at Isaac Plains East, additional to the strong performance that we had also in 2022. Lastly, in relation to the Millennium Complex, aside from our acquisition of the remaining 50%, the operation is recovering from the geotechnical challenges experienced in the third quarter, with volumes from the underground continue to ramp up to what we hope can be steady state with the two production units during the first quarter now in 24. We do intend to incorporate our expectations for the Millennium Complex in our guidance numbers going forward, now that we own 100% of the asset, and we're reporting volumes and EBITDA and the numbers overall above the line, relatively to what we've been doing to date, and with a further update expected to be provided when we release our full year results in the end of February. Touching briefly on our ongoing projects, South Walker expansion to lift our saleable production to 7 million tons per annum by early 2025 is progressing well with all approvals in place and key contracts awarded for the CHPP expansion and for the three additional hired truck and excavator fleets earlier this month. Supporting this project is also the earlier White South pit development, with box cuts to be capitalized and access already obtained in the fourth quarter in 23, and the first blast expected now in the first quarter 24. White South was always contemplated as part of the life of mine plan for South Walker, but we decided to bring forward access as part of the expansion plans to optimize strip ratios and costs and ensure a consistent flow of volume, especially from the southern pits closer to the CHPP. White South is literally adjacent to the CHPP, so it's one of the closest pits to the CHPP. So two of our additional excavator fleets that are being mobilized as part of the expansion ramp-up will be actually allocated to White South development. Over 1 million BCMs of material was removed in the quarter for MRA2C. 90% of ancillary infrastructure works is complete, and the project is progressing well, on time and on budget. The first stage of the Ramp 10 North box cutting portrayal was completed in November, delivering the anticipated volumes for 2023, despite some of the delays driven by the wet weather challenge early in the year, as you all may recall. Looking ahead, we are looking to continue the second stage in 24 to open up the full strike in Ramp 10 by the beginning of 25. That's always been predicted. At Isaac Plains, waste blasting at Pit 5 North commenced in the quarter. First ROM was mined in December, and as we indicated in the past, 1.4 million tons of ROM is expected to be mined between 2024 and 2025. Lastly, exploration progressed well in the quarter. A lot of our focus has been on the Lancewood project, but also in progressing and better defining our Nebo West tenement, which is part of the South Walker complex as a whole. Groundwater monitoring boreholes and ecology works are advancing well to support baseline data required for our environmental approvals for Lancewood. A pre-feasibility study for Lancewood is expected to be completed in the second quarter of 24, which will include the assessment of development options, both on a standalone basis or utilizing the upgraded infrastructure at Peabody's Centurion complex, which is the new name for the former North Goonyella mine, as contemplated in the transaction that we announced on the 26th of October, 23. So we look forward to update everyone once the pre-feas results are completed and available. On the market landscape, overall prices remained relatively stable over the last quarter, with a pickup in demand in China for imported met coals from pre-winter restocking, and some turbulence with Chinese domestic supply from safety-related shutdowns. Still stable availability of non-premium products with continued competition from Russian volumes. Unfortunately, the relativities against PLVs remaining wide through to the end of the year. Nonetheless, markets remain buoyant despite ongoing margin pressure on our clients with the steel producers. We remain pretty well positioned to benefit from any reversion of relativity to historical levels, which we expect to happen inevitably sometime in the near future. Like in 2023, 2024 started with some unfortunate wet weather in northern and central Queensland. Many mines and logistics systems heavily affected. We got a lot of rain just before the new year, close to 200 mils in 24 hours at South Walker and Isaac Plains, just as an example, and just under that at Poitrel. In South Walker, we did experience some outages in our train loadouts and CHPP as well due to lightning and loss of power and some burned out relays. So a bit of a curveball, nice challenge to the start of the new year and to make sure that we start a full throttle, but recovery is underway. I think we're pretty confident that we should be able to be fully recovered by the end of Q1 to our original production plans, of course, under the assumption that we don't have any more significant wet weather. Like in January 23, sales have been heavily affected, though, in January 24, especially due to railings and port downtimes. There was a lot of cancellations of trains and partly due to rail, but also to port performance. As some of you may be aware, there's a cyclone approaching northern Queensland now, so we need to monitor it closely, of course, to understand potential further impact to our shipment lineup. But all previous Q1 sales plans Our previous Q1 plan was pretty strong. We did plan for a strong Q1 on an annualized basis. And this may mean that although we have some impact in January, assuming we are able to recover, we still may be able to close Q1, hopefully in line with our usual annualized quarterly volumes. But of course, we're going to have to monitor the performance of the logistics chains in the next few weeks. I'll hand over to Shane. We will provide an overview of corporate updates and close out the summary before the Q&A.
Thanks, Marcelo. Stanmore closed out 2023 in a strong financial position again, ending with net cash of $126 million, inclusive of available cash of $446 million, and aggregate debt of roughly $320 million. This includes some significant one-off cash outflows during Q4, including around $53 million for the special dividend declared in November, as well as a corporate tax payment of $120 million in December, as signaled in the September 2023 quarterly activities report. Furthermore, there is, as has been noted previously, our capital program was much more weighted to the second half of the year, and specifically the fourth quarter, with a step up in spend on the aforementioned projects impacting overall quarterly cash flows. As noted by Marcelo, we announced a number of important transactions during the quarter, including the sale of the southern portion of the Wards Well mining lease and the purchase of the remaining interest of the Millennium Complex, comprising of the Millennium Open Cut and Mavis Underground operations. Wards Well transaction is significant for our overall vision and strategy. It brings forward value by monetizing an undeveloped area that, realistically, would not have been mined for some decades by Stanmore and was logically suited to be accessed by Peabody in conjunction with their re-entering of the North Kanyella mine, now renamed Centurion, to the south. However, it also helps facilitate a development pathway for our Lancewood asset, offering an infrastructure solution via an ability to access latent capacity at the Centurion wash plant and or washing capacity through a capital investment into that plant. This is in addition to framework agreements that will support partnerships in the extraction of value between our neighbouring Peabody and Stanmore operations. Regarding the Millennium Complex transaction, Stanmore had already invested into the capital development of the Millennium and Mavis Down mines via a $90 million Australian dollar debt facility, which is now wholly intergroup. The streamlining of ownership now also supports short-term working capital requirements as production is ramped up to a steady state during 2024, as well as providing potential synergies that may be realised with our neighbouring Poitrel mine, particularly as Millennium Coals are already washed at the Poitrel wash plant. The purchase of the remaining 50% also allows us to consolidate this position, as Marcelo mentioned earlier, and we'll include Millennium with the rest of our portfolio for performance reporting purposes from January 1, 2024 going forward. Finally, on guidance, as has already been highlighted, we were very pleased to report that total saleable production finished just above the top end of our previously reported public guidance. This is a testament to the quality of our site leadership and operations teams, as well as the quality of our assets, particularly in a year that was characterised by a number of challenges, such as the logistics constraints of the first half and generally back-ended production profile. We look forward to providing further updates on 2023 performance on free on board cash cost and capital, together with our release of our annual results in February. I'll now hand over to our moderator so that we can take your questions before Marcelo provides his closing remarks.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Jim Zhu from Barrenjoey. Please go ahead. Pardon me, Jim, your line is now live.
Oh, sorry. Hi, Mr. Shane. Just a couple of questions from me, please. Marcelo, you mentioned some pretty significant impacts on sales in January this year due to wet weather. 200 mils of rainfall at South Walker Creek in just 24 hours. Can you give a bit more color on the production impact we might expect? I mean, how many days was mining at South Walker affected? And what is Stanmore doing to mitigate the impact of wet weather, just seeing that Cyclone Kirrily continues to move towards the coast?
Thanks, Jim. Yes, it was, a pretty wet year end. Okay. Interestingly, as you know, South Walker is a pretty, large mine from a strike length standpoint. So just for reference, for example, our southern pits were a lot more impacted than the northern pits. Okay. So of course we are now trying to rig a little bit our sequences to be able to deal with some of these water issues in the southern pits. I think the good news is we did end, the year with strong stocks at South Walker, okay? So that's helping the lineup, especially in January and February, to make sure that we can service some of those shipments. We, in relation to what's coming now and with the cyclone and how aggravated the situation may be, I think we need to wait and see. Jim, the BCT has just advised yesterday they are commencing weather preparations, okay, so vacating berths, starting equipment tie downs and the likes. So we are now trying to make sure we watch closely and work closely, especially in relation to shipments that are about to be nominated, to avoid the merge exposure. Overall, from a production standpoint, we're still confident that we should be able to recover well. Poitrel, interestingly, was a lot less affected compared to South Walker and to Isaac Plains and compared to early in 2023, where it was probably one of the worst affected ones. But again, the resilience of South Walker and the flexibility we have there, given the number of pits we mine, and the quality of roads and the ability to, let's say, spread, much rock and drive in wet weather events. I think it's always proved to be pretty robust. So Isaac Plains is less flexible to a certain extent. They don't have the same number of pits of flexibility as we have in South Walker, but recovery is on the way, and I think it's looking positive. I think the main concern will be system performance, Jim, because not only us, a lot of people were as affected as us in terms of train cancellations and shipments. So everyone, in the same way as 2023, everyone will be trying to catch up in February and March. So I think it will be a race, okay, to get into trains and send boats out. So there's a prioritization, method in the below rail or in the Queensland, in the Goonyella chain. We need to make sure we remain tier one or worst case tier two to make sure we get prioritization of train paths to get our railings and our boats out. Lots of work at the moment. As I said, the plan always contemplated a stronger T1 than usually. So hopefully, despite the impact, we can still perform, let's say, a normal annualized Q1. Okay, if you look at our guidance we provided in late November.
Okay, thank you very much. And maybe just moving on to the dividend. In the special dividend announcement, you mentioned a one-off catch-up tax payment of $155 to $170 million in mid-2024. Will you be provisioning for this upcoming tax payment in how you think about your final dividend for this year, or will that just come out of 2024 cash flow and therefore affect next year's dividend?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. It's a good question. I think it's something that will probably go into the mix overall as we contemplate the dividend and whether to declare a dividend, final dividend for 2023. As we consider other, confirmed and known payments. I guess the advantage with that, though, is that we have been considering that, you know, in our overall cash flow forecasting and contemplating that as an operational cash flow as we would for any tax payments year on year. So so it's not necessarily something that that formulaically goes into a formula that calculates a dividend. It would be more something that is just considered in terms of overall cash requirements. So it'd be one for the board to contemplate, but wouldn't necessarily go into a calculation until such time as that we get there and consider the overall future cash flows for the business.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Brett McKay from Petra Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gents. Thanks for your time. Just a few questions from me. Just wanted to chat through Poitrel. It's had a cracking quarter from a production point of view. Can you just sort of outline some of the reasons why the ROM volumes were as high as they are, strip ratios coming down? You know, it looks like it's set up to be in a strong position going through this year into the completion of Ramp 10 box cut next year. Can you just maybe talk through sort of some of the improvements that have come through in the December quarter?
Brett, I think a combination of things. I think sequence, definitely one of them. Stripping performance in Poitrel overall, Nova Scavete performance being fantastic. And yield was a bit of a good surprise as well. Okay, so if you recall, we've done a lot of grade controlled yield reconciliations. Okay, for Poitrel, especially post acquisition and after, let's say, incorporation of the whole tech services and geological models into our belt, and we've been getting some good, let's say, actually outcomes relatively to what we've revised as part of those reconciliations. So I think as a combination of both, I think it was focusing, of course, of a bit more on coal to get into the wet weather with good in-pit inventories and ROM stocks. As you see, we have 900,000 tons, so we wanted to be in good shape for the weather, for the wet season, in terms of core availability, but also yield. So I think it's productivity, sequence, prioritizing a bit of core towards the end of the year ahead of wet weather, but also slightly better yield in the fourth quarter. So I think it's good. I think Poitrel is well shaped for 24. You know, we are already mining coal at Ramp 10. We are starting auger mining very soon. Okay, so we got approvals to mine some of the high walls in the southern pits, as we explained in the past. So there will be a bit of volumes coming out of auger mining Poitrel. It's pretty well set up for 24 as well. And as we always explained in the past, once Ramp 10 is fully developed, you have a stable strike, you know, and improve strip ratios going forward.
Thanks, Marcelo. Just quickly, can you go through some of the dynamics which give you confidence of that reversion on the PCI prices back to the longer-term average this year? Is there still some additional, you know, Russian PCI floating around the market that still needs to wash through that you can sort of see that coming to an end in the next 3 to 6 months that will allow that relativity to close back up?
Look, I think the first answer to Russian is yes. Russian coals are out there. And, of course, they've been cleared they are being cleared in markets like China, India, and Southeast Asia, which just happen to be also the key spot markets and the key growing markets, especially for India and Southeast Asia. So, of course, that's not helping relativities. So availability of PCI has been quite stable, okay, in the market, where the premium, let's say top of the food chain, which is the PLV type of hard coking coals, have been tighter, you know, mostly driven by production constraints in some of the major miners, as you're probably aware. So I think tighter, you know, premium supply and more stable availability of, let's say, PCI and semi-soft has kept that relativity wide. The reality is PCI is probably as low as it can be from a relativity standpoint. As I said in the past, so cheap now from a value use standpoint, not only for steelmakers to improve the injection rates, but also for them to even use a bit of PCI in the coke plants, okay? We are seeing some steelmakers already, you know, talking about and buying PCI to use in coke plants, given the wide differential. I think we need to watch and see, Brett, it is a distortion, and I find it hard to be sustainable for too long, given where it is now. But as I said, it's still under, you know, it's still under pressure because of tightness in the premium side of the market, which is what's keeping the PLV is high, okay, because on demand side, things are not very strong now. Things are quite stable and to a certain extent weak. China has been, you know, producing well, as you know, from a steel making standpoint. There's been steel out of China going to India. That's putting pressure on Indian steel makers as well, of course. There's a bit of coke production capacity starting in Southeast Asia, which is good for the demand of met coal, but on the other hand, puts a bit of pressure on other merchant coke plants elsewhere in India and China, which are also sometimes consuming seaborne coking coal. So I think, if anything, this weather disruptions is helping a little bit to keep the market stable, okay, given a bit of weakness we are seeing on the demand side. But the reality is that steelmakers, because of the pressure on margins, they've been destocking a lot to an extent that they're not ready really for any supply disruption. Or if you have any significant weather-related supply disruption, given the amount of destocking they've made in the last few months, you know, they could be caught by surprise. So, I mean, we need to watch and see, Brett. I think, as I said, I struggle to see PCI relativity staying at these levels for another year or so. I think, from a value use and from a cost standpoint, from a steelmaker perspective, they should normalize. And Russian coals are out there, and I don't think there's a lot more to come, you know, there's no significant expansions out of Russia that we are aware of. But because they are out there and in the spot markets, okay, in the markets that are growing, I think it's putting, of course, pressure on our seaborne Aussie PCIs.
Yep. Okay. All right. Thanks, Marcelo, and thanks for our strong result today. Cheers.
Brad.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone. Your next question comes from John Ogden from Eastern Value Limited. Please go ahead.
Morning, Marcelo and Shane. Thank you very much for the presentation. Great year. Just a few for me. Just on the PCI, can you give us the numbers in terms of what the discount is now to the premium low vol and what it sort of normally is, please? Just in general on the market, can you just give us any thoughts for 2024 in terms of, particularly China, I think, because obviously there's a lot of noise about China's economy being in trouble. Are you seeing that at all, that you're kind of worried about demand from China in 2024? Is that kind of overdone? Any thoughts in general in terms of direction of the market with supply and demand? And then just on Millennium, can you give us an idea of how you see that developing in terms of production and costs and the quality of the coal produced? I just note that you only paid $1 for the other 50%, so it just sounds like there's kind of problems there that might take some time to work through to get that into a kind of profitable mine. So maybe you can just tell us what you're going to have to spend to get that kind of up to speed. And if you've got any thoughts on the sort of CapEx roadmap for the next 2-3 years, given those projects, I mean, is there some years that are going to be kind of big CapEx, others less? I know you can't give full guidance, but if you can just give us on your thoughts on that. Thank you.
All right, John, starting with the market. Look, China, I mean, they just released numbers, and I think they did reach their GDP expectations, which was a bit even surprising to some. Steel production was strong, okay, despite some of the challenges. We are seeing a pickup of imports in China, and interestingly, when we have a weaker India buying, especially in the last few months, that there was a lot less buying in India for met coal. You are seeing a lot of the, let's say, the spot references and what's driving the market's been also a bit of the Chinese market. So it's coming back to what it used to be years ago. I don't think necessarily that's the sustainable longer term, given that India is where the growing market is. But to a certain extent, you are seeing, the domestic met coal prices in China also helping to give a bit of support to the seaboard, let's say. I'm talking the top of the chain, premium low-vol coking coals. PCI is, as from a relativity standpoint, as low as it is, as it has been. It's just north of 50% relativity against hard coking coal. It's extremely low. Long-term averages are about 70 to 80%. So, as I said, we need to hope to see that a normalization, at a certain point, hopefully still in 2024. As I've always been saying, PCI is extremely cheap for steelmakers now. So it is cheap for them to increase injection rates of PCI, but also even to use a little bit of PCI as in their coke blend. So I personally hope to see a normalization and believe that we should see a normalization up from this 50%. There are some pretty high cost PCI producers out there, not only here, but also in Russia. Fortunately, we are not one of them. So I think we are in good shape. In a price where they are now, we are still making very good margins from a PCI standpoint. Market-wise, in terms of trends, look, it is a flat steel market overall. I think despite that, we are seeing, met coal remain steady above 300 levels. I think that highlights, the constraints, especially on seaborne supply, okay, overall. I'm talking about the overall met coal spectrum, which is similar to, was true at the end of 2022, okay, with weak demand, but weaker supply, which is quite interesting. India will grow again, I think they will grow demand again, and they will pick up imports in 2024. They are commissioning new coke oven facilities, and they should, some of them may reach completion and commissioning during 2024. They are very active in trying to secure additional supply sources, okay, that includes Tata, JSW, and other the big steel makers, but also the state-owned ones, like the Steel Authority of India. U.S., from a supply side, U.S. is increasing marginally during 2023. They still plenty of Mongolian supply going into China. I spoke about Russia already, but there's a lot of tightness in the premium, you know, hard coking coal category, especially with the major miners in Australia. You know, we've heard talks of some of them recovering, expecting recoveries in 2024. And I think we need to see, because there's also weather disruptions. There's a new producer in Queensland ramping up, okay, which is the Olive Downs mines. And I think we need to see how that may impact the market. But there's not a lot more beyond that in terms of new supply. So, again, I think there is definitely weakness in the steel markets. China, interestingly, is producing, you know, well. Steel production is strong. They have constraints in metallurgical coal production domestically. Hence, they've been importing, you know, growing the imports of met coal. But again, I think long story short, PCI relatives are low, as I was explaining to Brett John before, and I do believe that we should see some improvement, you know, if not back to historical levels in the very short term, but at least from where they are today during 2024. I think the next question is, I'll touch maybe the CapEx first. We've released an update on guidance for 23 and 24 just in November last year. What I can say is, we've closed 23 just slightly above our upper end of the 2023 range, okay? Which is actually a good thing, okay? Because we've some of the projects, like the MRA project, the Poitrel levy that was completed ahead of schedule, and the Ramp 10 catch up, it happened, you know, progressed well, and some of them better than planned. And that explains a little bit also, let's say, some of the cash movements in the fourth quarter, given that November and December were very strong in capital, okay, which puts us in a good position in 24. As you saw, the 24 profile is, from our perspective, is actually below what we were envisaging a year ago if we were looking at 24. Based given the guidance range we've provided, so we have spread a little bit, have smoothened the capital profile a little bit. We pushed a couple of projects back into 2025, so we are seeing, let's say, a 24 that's slightly lower than we envisaged a year ago, but there's a bit more in 25. We decided to be a bit prudent in 24, you know, to reduce a little bit relatively to what we did in 23. As far as going forward is concerned, 25, we're always saying that we should be going back to 25 by second quarter or third quarter of 25, more to a normal sustaining CapEx level. But with some of this, you know, postponement of some expansion from 24, 25, we probably... 25 will be a slightly a touch above what we would otherwise expect, but as I said, most of the investment campaign, at least the ones we have now, will be done in 25. I think beyond that, we have all the capital projects. We have Lancewood, which is a growth project, quite prospective, quite interesting, that we actually hope to be able to be making a investment decision in the near future. But I don't think it's a 25 story. I think it needs environmental approvals, and if anything, it's something for 2 or 3 years from now, from an investment decision standpoint. Millennium, you want to comment on Millennium?
Yeah, I guess on the Millennium deal, I think the inquiry there was on, I guess, on the purchase price. I mean, one thing to note in our announcement that we made in announcing that deal is that there was a royalty attached to that as well. So I think it's probably not appropriate just to consider that a $1 deal, that the royalty kicks in at certain coal prices being achieved, as well as, you know, return on investment. So it's a deal that does still provide upside in the purchase price beyond the $1 deal. But from our point of view, I guess, what it does is it gives us full control of the asset, which allows us to streamline things administratively and also consider the working capital needs of that of those development areas as we move into steady state production this year. So I think that there's real benefits in that. We're already providing an Australian dollar facility of $90 million into that asset. That now becomes a 100% owned asset. So in terms of return on investment, stand to receive 100% of the profits, notwithstanding that royalty arrangement as well.
Maybe just to add to that, the Millennium Project now is fully set up. So I think the fixed cost structure is mostly fixed, okay, with the underground contract, mining services contract we have in place. So going forward, it's all about getting the tons and, of course, having some supportive coal prices. I think, fortunately, coal prices are still very supportive, so I think we need to get the tons and we need to see, you know, the production ramping up to where we always envisaged. I think we're going to be supporting, you know, the team to achieve that, incorporating Millennium now as part of our normal management routines that we have for all the three assets. It was always contemplated to be a short-term project in the Mavis underground and then moving into either the Millennium underground or now we have a bit more flexibility because we also have some other prospective potential undergrounds as in our portfolio. So that gives us a bit of a flexibility as well in going forward to use, let's say, that expertise and the equipment we have now in Mavis project. But the original plan was always to extend life into the Millennium underground as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your answers. Just one other quick one just occurs to me. I just wonder if there's any buyer's remorse, as it were, from the Queensland government on the royalties. I mean, has there been any other discussions that they might have realised that's kind of very detrimental to kind of investment in the industry? And Queensland's obviously absolutely crucial to the met coal global supply. So, I mean, any chance they might wind back a bit, the royalty? Thank you.
Look, yeah, thanks for the question. I mean, it is something that you can see in our financial results and annual results where we typically highlight the size of the check going to the Queensland government as a result of those royalty changes and have done in the past. So it's a big check to write. We continue to discuss with, you know, working with industry groups such as the QRC and in ways and means that we can influence government policy, but at the end of the day, we're kind of getting on with business as we need to do from this point forward. There's been no indications of changes at this point, but, you know, we'll continue to make sure that people are aware and the government's aware of where we stand on the issue.
I think that means there's a new premier in Queensland. Okay, there's been, some initial meetings with industry representation and some signals of intention to re-engage on a positive, let's say, foot at the beginning of 2024. But I think the general message is, I think we agree to disagree on royalties, but let's see where else we can work together, let's say, for the benefit of Queensland and the industry as a whole. So I mean, that's the general messaging. So I mean, there's not a lot of expectation that under the current government there will be changes, okay, to the existing policies.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Matos for closing remarks.
Look. Thanks, everyone, for your questions and the ongoing support of all all of you, our shareholders. It's been fantastic to engage with you again during 2023. We all look forward here to meeting many of you again next month after we release the full annual results. As usual, I'd also like to take the opportunity to thank our employees and contractors who are invaluable in the ongoing success of our business and performance of our business. Thanks, everyone, for your time.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.